The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
And we are back with Agribusiness Innovation, of course, on Freedom 106.5 FM. This is my hour speaking to you about the business of agriculture. And in the news for the last couple of days, one of the things that is happening is the impact on the pork or the pig industry, I want to say. There is something that is happening, and Dr. Anil Prasad, who is a lecturer in large animal medicine, the food bias at the School of Veterinary Medicine, University of the West Indies. He is also the head of the Department for the Clinical Veterinary Sciences at the School of Veterinary Medicine. He has about 15 years of experience in farm animal medicine. He completed his DVM in 2007 from the University of the West Indies before proceeding on a Fulbright Fellowship in 2001 to the Ohio State University, where he completed the MS in 2013 and PhD programs at the College of Veterinary Medicine, the Ohio State University. His research interests are the epidemiology and ecology of foodborne pathogens, antimicrobial resistance, and swine production and health. Dr. Prasad, thank you for joining us.
Hi, good morning, Jody. How are you doing?
Wonderful. So, what exactly is happening right now to these pigs?
Okay, so recently there was a detection of a disease on a farm in Wallerfield area. The disease is called PRRS, porcine reproductive and respiratory syndrome. And it's a highly infectious virus, and due to the surveillance efforts by the Ministry of Agriculture, we were able to identify the disease, and as such, they have instituted quarantine measures on that farm, as well as currently doing other surveillance testing at surrounding farms to ensure that there has been no further spread of this disease.
What does this disease do to the animal?
Right. So PRRS, as its name, as I said, porcine reproductive and respiratory syndrome, is what we call a multi-systemic disease. So that affects multiple areas. So it causes respiratory signs. So you'll have animals coughing, sneezing, severe respiratory distress, difficult breathing that as a result of pneumonia that could potentially lead to the death of the animal, as well as reproductive signs where the farm will observe increased abortions, stillbirths, what you call mummified fetuses being born. So, yeah.
What happens then if a human consumes an infected animal?
So that's a good thing. One good thing I'll say is that this disease is not zoonotic, so meaning that it does not transfer to humans. So in terms of food safety, it is of minimal risk to humans.
Well, that is actually good news. This disease, where does it then originate? Is it something that we may have imported, or is it something that would have been here all the time?
So that's one of the areas that's currently being investigated right now. It's what we call an exotic disease. Prior to 2024, we never had this disease in Trinidad. In 2024, on April or so, it was identified at a farm in South Trinidad, and that farm was depopulated. There was surveillance testing also carried out, and the disease was not picked up on any other farms until recently. So is it linked? We do not know at this time, or it could be that there's a second introduction of the disease into the country.
So my question is this.
Where did it come from?
No. My wonder is that if it is that it is minimal risk to humans, if not at all, why can't we allow the pigs on the farm to continue to survive if possible, and then you don't let it mix with anything else? You just let them, we could consume what's on the farm or something. Why do we have to kill all of them?
Because the problem is the risk of farm spread, right? Because the disease is so infectious, it can spread via multiple routes. And I mean, one of the things, something as simple as the feces being getting onto your coveralls or boots, and you're going to visit in another farm, you could transfer it to another farm, and that could cause problems. The issue also in terms of if you stay, just keeping that disease, those disease animals on the farm, it's too much of a risk for the rest of the pig population in the country.
Wow. Okay, so we have this disease then happening. Is there anything that pig farmers should have in place to protect themselves?
Yeah, so the primary method right now protection of your farm is what we call exclusion, right? So in terms of using biosecurity measures. So what you want to do is to prevent your herd from being exposed to this virus. And we can do this by preventing access to the animals. So we look at limiting visitors onto the farm. Anyone who's visiting any farm should not have visited another pig farm that same day. Workers shouldn't be wearing the same clothing on the farm and off the farm. We shouldn't have, we should look at when we're purchasing animals to make sure that we buy animals from reputable sources. And if you're buying from a farm, to ensure that you get a complete disease history of that farm, consult your veterinarian to ensure that the animals that you are purchasing are healthy animals, okay? We know that in Trinidad, we do have issues with the illegal importation of animals. And sometimes you get those animals at a lot lower cost, so that's something to be avoided at this time. You know, in Trinidad, you see this thing, cheap thing, no good. And this is definitely a case of where if you're getting a deal that sounds to be too good to be true, it should probably be avoided. So exclusion, you need to protect your animals, limit access to your farm, avoid sharing of equipment, and if you're purchasing animals, make sure you get a complete disease history of the farm you're purchasing it from and consult your vet or animal health professional prior to that.
Jumping from pigs to another animal, how possible is that?
So far, it's the disease, the virus only affects pigs, so it doesn't pose a risk to other animals at this time.
Has this virus, to your knowledge, caused any major disruption in another country in the pig industry?
It is a major disease. If you look at in the U.S. alone, they spend millions and millions of dollars in research each year to try and find a cure for this virus or some method of preventing the virus. So yes, it can cause severe disruption. Think of it, this disease getting out into the population, and you have a naive population as one that's never been exposed to the virus before, and suddenly you're going to have abortions occurring, so you're looking at your reproductive, your future generations being lost. You're going to have, this is in your pigs, right? You're
going to Anil, I want to stop here for a second. I have a call I want to take. Caller 11, Freedom 106.5 FM.
Hi, good morning. Is it in Waterfield alone this infection has taken place?
All right. Anil, is it only in Waterfield we found this so far?
As far as we know, yes. Again, at this time, yes. But again, these things would be best addressed. You can contact the Ministry of Agriculture. And you know they do have a PERS hotline that farmers can contact if they have any questions or queries about the disease, right? And I could share that number with you guys. It's 280-7945. And so any farmers have any concerns or queries, they can contact that number. And the ministry staff will be happy to address those concerns.
Okay, so you know what? When people get sick, right, we usually wait until it's too late to get treatment. And by the time we present ourselves to our doctor, the doctor said, you know, if you had come in a week or two earlier, I could have helped you. Mm-hmm. I want to know, what is your role then in veterinary professionals in instances like these? What is the usual role of a veterinarian in supporting farms and the wider livestock community?
The farm veterinarians play a number of roles. In this case, and one of the primary roles, in addition, and people normally look at vets as ones to come and treat animals, but they also play a major role in preventive medicine. So we could help to identify areas that, again, we look at biosecurity, help to detect potential diseases at an early stage, right? That that could be missed. We play an important role in also when we go to farms to assess the overall condition of the animals in terms of ensuring like, proper nutrition is being given to the animals. You have proper sanitation measures. All of these things help to prevent illnesses on farms. Okay, so it's not only just we treat sick animals, but we also play an important part in preventing diseases also.
Now, we touched on this earlier, but I would like to know, how can we then reassure the public that local pork remains safe to eat during a disease outbreak like the PRRS?
Well, one of the primary things you have to remember is that that the disease is not zoonotic, so there's no risk of those of the disease transferring from pigs to humans via meat, via consumption of the meat. The other thing that we know about is that once an animal is supposed to be slaughtered, it should go through an abattoir. And at the abattoir, the animals are inspected to ensure that what we call anti-mortem and post-mortem inspections to ensure that they're healthy. So anti-mortem, we look at the animals before they are slaughtered to see if they have any clinical signs of illness. And then post-mortem, we look at animal again, the carcass of the animal to ensure there are no signs of illness there. So again, those are the measures that are instituted right now and have been in place for a number of years to ensure that animals that are slaughtered are safe for consumption. But I think the main thing we should remember here is that PRRS is not transmissible to humans, so there's no risk via consumption of the meat.
Of course, to our listeners, if you wanted to jump into the conversation, phone lines are 625-2257 or 627-3223, or you can WhatsApp us at 306-1065. Dr. Posada, I had one question because it's something that I saw a veterinary comment online once. He said that surgeries performed by veterinarians are as complex as surgeries that are done on humans. So for instance, if he would have had to do a cesarean on a dog, it was pretty much the same level of complexity as having to do it on a human. What was the comment on that?
I would totally agree with that statement. We look at it as similar in terms of surgical, the actual procedure is very similar. And we think about a vet having to, we also learn, now we know, only have to learn the anatomy of a human. Well, with human doctors, will learn anatomy of one species. We have to learn for dogs, cats, pigs, cows, and small sheep and goats also. Essentially, the surgeries boil down to the same procedure you're doing. I would say same degree of complexity involved.
Now, somebody who is having a small herd in the backyard, when I say a small herd, you know, there are some people who will have some land and say, I want some goats, I want some pigs, that sort of thing. Are there any standard practices that you would say that people should employ to not just prevent a disease like this, but other things that may potentially affect them?
Well, the first thing I would always advise anyone who's staying get into farming per se is ensure you have some degree of training in that area. So while you may not have formal, be able to go do like a BSc program or go to ECIAF and do their associate program or something like that, at least take advantage of, sometimes the Ministry of Agriculture have these short courses, 2 to 3 day courses. So at least you learn the basics of the animals first. So you get an idea of nutrition, what are the housing requirements for these animals? So, because you don't want to buy 2 or 3 sheep and put it in your backyard and then realize you don't know what to feed them, how to house them. And very soon you'll run into problems. So education is very important. Reach out to your government, the agriculture officers at the ministry also, and seek advice from the extension officers, the vets there. They'll be able to help you also. So just it's important to get some basic knowledge of the animals. And for disease prevention, again, we talk about good management practices. So again, housing for animals is very important. Nutrition, depending on what species, again, it'll vary in terms of what sort of medical care we need, whether hoof care is required, giving of vitamins, supplementation, all of these things.
So I think that farmers really have to put some extra care into how they would be managing their farms right now, because you don't want to destroy the industry, because I feel as if there is a risk as to the industry suffering I don't want to say a collapse, but if people are suddenly afraid to consume these things, then, you know, you're going to have people who have farms that are safe product are going to get affected. What role would you then see farmers have in promoting that the food that they are producing is safe?
Well, so again, I think the role of farmer in this case would be to ensure that the product that they sell is one that is of a good quality, right? And many of our farmers already do that. We also have to continue, the farmers as a farmers and the whole have to continue their efforts to ensure that their animals are protected. So we continue with our biosecurity measures, continue to ensure that there's the animals are not exposed to the virus. We also have to look at doing daily observances of your animals and ensuring that if you observe anything that is off, anything that is of concern, to contact your vet officer.
Well, you're saying that. I have a pig farmer who messaged me, actually. He wants to know that he's never dealt with this before and wants to know what are the main signs that he should look for.
Okay, so again, we look at, we think back to the name of the virus, right? Porcine reproductive and respiratory syndrome. So one of the first things with any ill animal, and it's pretty much a nondescript clinical sign that you'll see the animal go off feed. So that's one of the first things that may indicate that something is not right.
As in not eating as much?
Yes, not eating as much. So we know pigs tend to be very inquisitive animals. So you walk into a pen, by the pens, they normally come to the gate, they're looking up, like say, looking at to see what's happening, if it's time for food or what. So if you notice one animal is not being very active, that should clue in that, hey, maybe something is going wrong. If the animal goes off feed, that will also indicate something is off. And then also if you start to notice increase in your respiratory signs, so animals coughing, sneezing, nasal discharges, labored breathing, these are things that would clue in that something might be off. Also, if you start to observe reproductive signs, so if you notice the animal, you have increased number of abortions happening on your farm, right? So that's animals giving birth prematurely and the stillborn piglets. If you notice when the piglets are born, they're born very weak, right? Again, that may clue in that something is going on. So these are things that if you notice any of these signs, right, it's better to err on the side of caution or contact your vet officer to have a look at it.
Other than the physical signs that we might see, as a veterinary, how do you, when you get to a site, how do you confirm that this disease is present? Is it a blood test you have to do?
So one of the first screening tests we will do is we test for the antibodies. So yes, and that can be done either via blood or via saliva of the animal. And so the ministry has been a program going on with that. So we'll do that testing first, and then we'll confirm with a polymerase chain reaction or PCR test to confirm the presence of the virus.
That sounds similar to what we did in COVID.
Yes, very similar to what we did in COVID.
Is it the same kind of swab?
But what we do is a little bit different in that we have a cotton rope that we get the animals to chew on. So we get a larger volume of saliva, and we get from multiple animals at the same time. And that's what will be tested.
Oh.
It's a bit difficult to go catch a pig and ask them to do individual swabs.
So yeah, there's a rope that you said that they would chew on.
If you look at the ministry webs on social media, you'd see that they would have posted a couple of videos of vets on the field testing, and you'd see where they've been using the that method. Using the cotton rope.
That's actually quite interesting. I never thought of that. So based on how we're seeing one farm it's been detected on so far, we have so far no public evidence that it is present anywhere else in Trinidad. What then possibly could be some of the causes for an isolated incident? Not saying that this is what happened to our listeners, so I just want to clarify that we are not saying this is what happened, but I want to know what are some of the potential causes for an isolated incident on our farm to be discovered.
So that's a good question. This is again casting no aspersions to the farm that has been identified at, but somehow or the other the animals became exposed to the virus. So whether it was directly or indirectly is what needs to be identified. So the exposure, as I said, could be indirect in that someone working on the farm may have been exposed to a sick pig that was shedding the virus. It got onto their clothing or onto their boots or something like that, and it got back onto the farm. This is why I mentioned earlier about the issue of illegal importation of animals, right? And we know it occurs. We have seen multiple videos and pictures and heard many stories of it occurring. And these animals could have been, these illegally imported animals could have been exposed to the virus or any viral agent. And they come to the country without going into quarantine and then present a risk to our animals.
So listen, in the past I've seen animals being discovered coming in illegally and they were slaughtered, and the public was in a little bit of an uproar because we're seeing why we slaughtering perfectly healthy animals. Potentially, instances like these is why they have to be done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you look at it, revert to the illegally imported animals, although they may look healthy, we do have a stage where animal could be asymptomatic, so they have no clinical signs but shedding diseases, right? So that is why one of the reasons that any illegally imported animals should be culled and disposed of it immediately in those cases.
And I know it's not even just animals. We had this incident with sweet potato weevils coming into the country, and it wasn't a big deal. But, I mean, the assumption is somebody potentially brought in some sweet potato slips from another island illegally and exposed the country to this problem. And that's why 10 years ago we had such a massive problem with hundreds of acres having to be destroyed because of it. And now we have viruses affecting the farms, which means that, again, something came in at some point in time not being monitored, and the infections are happening. Wow, so this could really be a costly thing happening to the industry, eh?
Yeah, so again, as we talk about biosecurity being very important to protect and protection of the animals and plants also. So again, when we talk about telling farmers about our lifestyle farmers, what don't have any unwanted visitors onto your farm, if anybody coming on, make sure they scrub their boots, have foot baths with appropriate disinfectant in place, so that, again, to limit that potential entry onto a livestock farm is something that our plant producers should also consider, especially when it comes to sharing of equipment and things like that. You know, that's potentially a nice, easy way to shed, to spread any disease.
And you know, we always see that little checkbox on those forms when you're coming into Trinidad via air. Are you bringing any animal type products with you? Are you bringing any plant materials with you? And we always take it for granted, and some people will want to kind of hide a seed in the suitcase or something. So these are the things that potentially can happen, and we take it so lightly. Wow, yeah. Dr. Prasad, this is... Tell me.
And Judy, this is only one disease that we have had, right? I mean, the fact is that there are multiple other diseases outside of Trinidad that our animals have never been exposed to. So it's very important for public and farmers and everyone to take special care. We talk about something as simple as a pork meat, as a pork sandwich potentially coming into the country, and you're feeding that to a pig, that could cause problems also. So these things we have to be very careful of, right? So,
Dr. Prasad, yeah. I want to thank you for coming on to the program today at such short notice. When I saw your resume, I said there is nobody that I know that is more qualified than you to speak on this topic. I do have any closing remarks for our listeners?
Yeah, sure. So one of the things that we have to make sure is that, one, we don't panic, right? As mentioned before, at this time, the disease has been isolated to one farm. The ministry, they have ramped up their surveillance program. And if you have any concerns, questions, make sure and reach out to the ministry. As I said, to the hotline number, that 2807945 number, as well as look at their social media pages, contact the vet offices to make sure that whatever information you do get is accurate information. Okay? And for the farmers, again, biosecurity, very important. Protect your animals. Right? Don't allow any unwanted visitors onto.
Thank you very much, Dr. Prasad, for joining us. Very enlightening. Hopefully, we have you on again, because I love the discussion. And to our brothers of Presentation College, Shogun, us who are listening, members of the alumni, we would like to say good morning to you from us.
Proud to be pres.
All right, Dr. Prasad, we'll talk soon.
Okay, bye.
And of course, we are still here, Agribusiness Innovation. First part of the show, of course, dealing with that issue that is affecting the pigs. And now, second half of our show today, we have a young entrepreneur who has a farm, an indoor farm, something that looks quite technologically advanced. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Judy. Thanks for having me on.
All right. So I want to know, tell me about yourself a little bit.
So going back to, I'd say a good starting point would be where I went to secondary school, just to get some reference point in Trinidad. I would have attended St. Mary's College up to the CAPE level before I went to university abroad. Studied economics and environmental science, 4 years in the US. Once I came back to Trinidad, I really looked into what I could do with my degree, but also was very passionate about starting my own business. And looking at Trinidad at that point in time, which was around 2016, me and one of my friends really saw that agriculture seemed like there was a lot of room for growth and development. So we decided, why not start something to do with agriculture?
You know, so many people don't want to get into agriculture because it's such hard work. I hear you talking about you want to get into it. Was it that it was something on the side, or was it something you were looking at as a main form of income?
It was definitely a main form of income. I mean, we were young, starting out.
How old were you?
Still young now, but I think we were 22 maybe at the time.
What's the age now?
32, I think, yeah.
Okay. So what form of agriculture were you looking at?
So we were looking at hydroponics and indoor farming. So at that point in time, I feel the indoor farming craze had started. So a lot of companies in the US were now starting out. Container farming was a big thing. So we looked at it as an opportunity to say, maybe we could bring some technology to the farming in Trinidad.
Do you come from a farming family?
No, definitely not.
Have you ever farmed anything before that?
Not really. I mean, I have done some, I guess, when I was younger, programs where you'd maybe do like a raised bed in your yard. But apart from that, no. No real experience in farming.
All right. So the idea came. Did you tell your parents I want to go into farming?
Yeah. I mean, I told them, well, we want to try this business. I mean, they were pretty supportive in that sense. At that stage in my life, I'd also encourage anybody young as well. That's probably the best time to do it when you don't really have much responsibilities on your back. That's how we kind of decided, like, well, we have the time to try and experiment, so why not do it now?
All right, so you had the idea. Now, how do you get the knowledge to start to execute this plan?
Right, so I think in this day and age, especially even more now, the amount of information that's available, whether it be online or different resources of videos, YouTube, research that you could do, that's kind of like how we looked at it. We had a lot of people doing farms and showing you how to set different things up in the States or in other countries. So we more or less did our own research, studied, looked, decided what we wanted to plan as the best approach. And then from there, we were able to do a proof of concept within a space that we had, a small 20-foot container.
What were the commodities that you started with?
Mostly leafy greens. Right. So when we would have looked at the market, we were looking more to deal with as many restaurants as we could. So more like lettuces, also some herbs like basil, which we would have spoken to, I guess, a few restaurants who found they were in short supply.
So you set up this farm. Mm-hmm. You did the work yourselves in actually building the farm itself?
Correct. So, I mean, when we looked at it originally, there were pre-made, prefabricated farms, which I guess the actual cost of bringing that down here was way out of our budget. So we had to look to see how we could design to actually build this ourselves. So everything we would have made and done ourselves, just by looking at different, I guess, research and videos online.
The first crop you ever did it come out good?
It's a while ago, but I don't think so. I don't think it was great, but it wasn't bad, I'd say. But I mean, we knew it would all be experimental to start with, so we're open to the idea of failure, at least starting out. So that's definitely something that at least we're able to roll with the punches.
All right, so we're going to go into a quick commercial break, and when we get back, we're going to jump back into this. iFarm is the name of the company.
iFarm TT Limited, correct.
All right, so we'll be back shortly.
Look at this place. I never see a grocery like this in this country.
Darling, look at parking. Like these people own the whole street.
Look at these prices. Like everything reduced. And you ain't see how helpful and friendly their staff is.
You see, we get everything and still have lots of money remaining to get the kids stuff for school and also to carry them somewhere good for the vacation.
If you want to save money and live better, shop at Mirage Westside Supermarket in Arima or Jumbo Foods in Barataria, where shopping is a pleasure.
Every weekday morning, Tuska Martinez brings you the stories that matter to you. On The Human Impact, tackling the issues of the day, exploring health and wellness that hits home, diving into powerful features, bold opinions, and a book club that keeps you thinking. It's thoughtful, it's fearless, and it's yours. Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 12 noon on Freedom 106.5 FM.
Speak your mind, Trinidad and Tobago, and let's make it count. The Human Impact, only on Freedom 106.5 FM.
The cricket action is heating up, and Freedom 106.5 FM is your home of cricket this summer. From July 20th to August 3rd, it's 8 explosive T20 matchups across Jamaica, St. Kitts, and Miami as the West Indies take on Australia and Pakistan. Then it's 3 massive one-day internationals right here in Trinidad, August 8th, 10th, and 12th, as Pakistan returns to battle the Windies on home turf. That's 11 international matches live on Freedom 106.5 FM. 106.5 FM, plus 11 dynamic one-hour highlight specials on CNC3. Follow Freedom 106.5 FM on social media for the full match schedule. Real cricket, real discussion, only on Freedom 106.5 FM.
Coverage brought to you by Alpha Transport. We're not just about transport, we're about service.
Go big, go digital, go everywhere with the Big Board Company. With 18 high-impact digital billboard locations across the country, the Big Board Company puts your brand where it belongs, front and center. With state-of-the-art LED screens in the most high-traffic areas across the country, you are guaranteed to be seen. Get flexible scheduling, real-time updates, and the most eye-catching and dynamic visuals. With free artwork from local businesses to national brands, we bring reach and visibility like nobody else does. 18 locations, endless possibilities. Advertise with the Big Board Company and get that big board impact. Call 368-3754 for more information.
Cricket fans, get ready to turn up the energy at the all-new Cricket Energy.
West Indies cricket is all we like.
This Thursday, August 7th, Cricket Energy comes to Offside Restaurant and Sports Bar in South Park, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. It's cricket games, karaoke, dance-offs, cricket trivia. Meet your favorite players. Win signed merchandise, special t-shirts, exclusive tickets to the upcoming West Indies versus Pakistan ODI at the Brian Lara Cricket Academy in TNT. All-inclusive dinner vouchers worth $1,500. Plus, tickets to Wiener Boy Entertainment, Boundary Bacchanal, Cricket Party Stand. All hosted by Slam 1.5 FM, Vibe, CT 105 FM, Freedom 106.5, and the 95, the ultimate one.
West Indies going higher, full of energy.
With live broadcasts and social media updates, the all-new Cricket Energy, powered by Cricket West Indies, Guardian Media, Sixes, Offside, and Nowhere Nowhere Restaurant.
Hey, drippy with the drip drip. Drippy with the drip drip.
What you doing, boy?
Well, the rain coming down and the drips making a nice rhythm. Hey, drippy with the drip drip. Drippy with the drip drip.
Boy, stop it. You know how long I have to fix that?
Why not check out Roof Mechanics and Company? They have quality roofing materials. They supply everything from purlins, I-beams, hot channels, and metal decking to new wave sheeting, corrugated standing seam panels, custom flashing, and aluminum guttering and more at amazing prices.
You being for real?
I being real, girl. Visit Roof Mechanics and Company today at Debe or Canupia, or you could shop online at roofmechanicstt.com.
I go in now. Me ain't taking you on this trip, no?
Visit Roof Mechanics and Company dot Limited today in Etech Park, Debe or Monroe Road, Canupia. Roof Mechanics and Company Limited. We make lasting impressions.
And of course, we are back here. David Johnston, iFarm, TT Limited. So I got to the point where you learned how to do this indoor farming. What I want to know is then, how did you then get customers to buy the products that you produced?
So our original market research, where we get towards certain restaurants, we would have met with them before we actually produced the product. And once we actually got the product, we would have taken it to them to sample, try it out, test it out, give feedback, etc. At the same time, we were learning our different systems. So we would have done or integrated into our 20-foot space two types of growing systems. So we were just trying to see which one would grow the best product or the best item, flavor-wise, time-wise, etc. And based off of the feedback from the restaurants, we would have taken it from there. So we would have just dealt with mainly two restaurants, which we would, as I said, we would have had before, contact before. And from there, then we were able to expand the operation to say, well, okay, maybe we want to go to another restaurant or try selling to family members or friends, that sort of stuff.
But how are you paying yourself during this time?
Oh, well, we weren't really paying ourselves. So at that point in time, what we did was we would have taken all the money we would have gotten when we worked, because I would have worked for maybe about 6 months. We would have spent that money building the structure, et cetera, et cetera. But we were very aware that at that point or that stage, we weren't really going to be making much income. So we weren't really spending much. And at the same time, we would do jobs on the side, whether it just be to get some money. But I was living at home, so it wasn't as bad in terms of having bills.
When you say we, so you and a friend, you said?
Yeah, correct.
Is it still, the business is still a we?
Yes, but different people, well, different setup within the business now. So the business has grown a lot from since, I guess, where we were in that stage to where we are now.
Could you describe to us what the changes were like?
So within the space, I think we would have underwent two major expansions. So the first one would have happened in 2019 into 2020, where we got a little bit of investment into the company after showing the proof of concept. There we would have opened our first facility in San Juan, which was about a 4,000 square foot warehouse space. Once we got that up and running, well, COVID came and we had to pivot slightly. So away from restaurants, because obviously restaurants closed down, and more to groceries, so retail, and direct to consumer. So a lot of people who were home, as easy as us sharing out WhatsApp messages to, I guess, friends and friends sharing it to friends, anybody looking for fresh produce, fresh greens, that sort of stuff, we're able to build a channel like that. And then also within the supermarket game, we started to look into more, well, more supermarkets. How do we get into supermarkets, our packaging, et cetera, et cetera. Once we, I guess, got to the stage of about 2023, in San Juan, we would have run out of space in terms of expanding. And that's where we moved to our second space, which is in the E-Tech agro-processing plant in Moruga. So that's a bit bigger. It's about 12,000 square feet inside. And we more or less set up something very similar to what we had in San Juan, just maybe a bit more in terms of the technology used to produce. And that's pretty much where we are now.
How do you manage the distance to Moruga? Because that was a complaint for many people in the agri industry. It's too far for them to get to and from work every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is difficult. But I guess it was a lot of it was commitment, just needed to do it. That was probably the best option for us in terms of the space that was already there, as well as the cost to rent. And a lot of our staff in the Moruga facility is from in and around the St. Mary's Princesstown area. So I would say mainly more just the management staff, whether it be myself or some of the other maintenance leads, would go down there, and well, obviously the delivery drivers. So in terms of managing, it's just something you have to do. We kind of share the load, go a couple times a week, that sort of thing.
Now, how do you manage distribution? Because you mentioned supermarkets, so mm-hmm. you have your own distribution that you use?
Yeah, so I mean, we have our own vehicles that we would have and our drivers. So we manage all our distribution in-house because we do tend to have quite a bit of deliveries, especially when you're dealing with, I guess, direct-to-consumer. Some people might not be there one day, maybe they want it at a different time. So we deliver Monday to Thursday, sometimes on a Friday. And to consumer households, I'd say maybe we have about 50 to 60 consumer deliveries at least. And then, well, restaurants and groceries take up a bulk portion of that delivery.
That delivery is always the hardest part of any business because, you know, getting people when they're home for a perishable item is when they could receive it, where they could receive it. You get to a location, somebody to answer the phone.
Correct.
A distribution is the hardest thing. I mean, it's not like you're selling something that you could put back on a shelf.
Correct.
Something with a limited shelf life.
Definitely. And I mean, it does, you learn along the way, but there's a lot of, I say, growing pains we would have had, especially like when we first started, you're in a car that maybe the AC not cold enough, or you have a lot of trips to make, and whatever sits in the car, especially when you go inside a store, you had to turn off the car because you have to lock the car. That sort of stuff maybe heats up, and a customer complains it didn't last as long as it usually does. So all that sort of things you need to take into account when planning that sort of distribution.
So what are the items that you produce right now?
So right now, I would say we have about 12 different SKUs, mainly ranging between different salad mixes. So we do a romaine lettuce. We have what we would call a premium greens mix, which is a mix of different Asian and mustard greens. We do some baby kales. We do cilantro. We do basil. We do arugula. We've recently started doing some more mushrooms. So we do oyster mushrooms, as well as our newest mushroom is a lion's mane mushroom. Added to that, a few other salad mixes in there and some things specifically for restaurants.
Now, you've been in business for some time and businesses do take long to pay back.
Mm-hmm.
Are you at the point now where you think the business is stable enough to pay sufficiently, or is it still a work in progress?
I would say it's still a work in progress, but we've also taken on a bit of loans to actually get this whole operation down Maruga and San Juan up and running. So right now, I'd say we're almost at the stage where we're covering everything. Right. So we're close. Just at the Maruga facility, there are just a few more things that we need to get into place to get us to full capacity. And once we're at the full production, once our sales and distribution channels are able to hold the load, then I think we'll be at a good place where we more or less at equilibrium.
What are some of the retail locations that you have your items stocked at?
So I'd say we're at most major supermarkets. So I have Massey stores, maybe about 12 locations, Extra Foods, True Value, JTA, also smaller boutique shops, like whether it be Blooms, Artie's, Peppercorns. I feel like I might be forgetting some people, but yeah, a decent amount of stores.
And what is the brand name that you have your items under?
So it'll all be under iFarm. So you'd see it's kind of a light bulb with some plants inside. And the packaging is very colorful. So each item is more or less a different color. So if you go to whether it be a Massey stores and you notice like a section of the store where it has blue, red, pink, purple, those different packaging with all salads, that's iFarm.
Was there ever a situation as a business person where you said, you know what, that's it for me, I am feeling like I could just go back and get a fixed salary at the end of the month?
Yeah, more than you know. almost every day. No, kidding. I think it's pretty difficult, as any business owner starting off would know. There are many days that you wake up and you think to yourself, I think it would be a lot easier if I just got a regular 8-to-4, 9-to-5 job. I got a salary, steady salary at the end of the month. The weekend comes and I didn't have to think about plants dying or something going wrong or what's the next stage. So I feel like it happens way more than you'd think. It's a lot harder than most people might think starting out. I mean, it was definitely a lot harder getting into it than I thought it would be starting off.
I feel as though that it's difficult for us to translate to the average person that has never been a business owner how difficult these things are, because you have to feel it know it. Like, I had an incident this week where a driver had a flat tire and he just drove on the flat tire and destroyed it. And now you have an extra expense that,
correct,
you know, and those little things add up, making the blood pressure go up bit more.
For sure. And I feel like, especially dealing with customer service too, it's very, I'd say it's difficult to gain a customer, but it's very easy to lose one. So those small things, whether it be, as you said, somebody gets an accident, the delivery doesn't show up on time. Obviously, other people have their businesses to run, whether it be a restaurant or whatnot. They're expecting it to be there, say at 10 o'clock, doesn't get there till 2, 3, or maybe even the next day. And that's kind of a relationship severed that maybe took very long to build. So, I mean, it is difficult. I want to stress that, but I do think it's worth it. If you stick with it long enough and you have something that seems pretty viable, in time, I think you do reap the rewards.
Indoor farming is something that I believe is very technical.
Yeah.
How do you then ensure that the team that you have manage the plans in terms of the production plans, executing exactly what you need to be execute?
I'd say it's a lot of training, and then you're trying to incorporate as much technology as you could, whether it be for system monitoring, because that's pretty important. So say you have an accident with your plants one day. I mean, it takes just one day, and that could wipe out your entire production for, I'd say, the next 6 weeks almost, depending on how bad it is. So having systems in place where these machines more or less monitor to make sure everything's at a certain level and can give you feedback, real-time updates or notification if something jumps out of bounds, that's the first thing that I'd say is very helpful. And secondly, it's you being there for a lot of the beginning or operations, starting off operations, so that the staff can actually understand, like, this is how it needs to be done, this is why this is so important, etc., etc.
I saw some companies have an app on the phone where they could actually see what's happening in the farm and get all the data. Do you have that?
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, we have that. But and cameras, too, I guess, so you could see how the staff is operating or what stage they've reached throughout the day. Because everything runs, I guess, within the farm as a regular factory or production system or production line you would expect it to run. So certain things need to be done by certain times for the system to actually operate. You miss something by a day, it kind of throws things off. Maybe you don't get as much from the harvest because we don't necessarily plant to harvest in one big go. So we have it so it's a steady weekly harvest throughout the system. So every week we know, again, more or less the same thing, makes it a little bit easier in terms of actually sales and consistency.
You know, I have a farm.
Mm-hmm.
Mine is outdoor.
Right.
I've done hydroponic farming before.
Mm-hmm.
Not as technical as you, mm-hmm. vertical systems. And I prefer ground farming. I just find it so much more forgiving.
Uh-huh.
Why do you prefer the indoor farming?
I would say ground farming might be a little bit more backbreaking to start. At least a lot of the staff members, they say they did farm outside or they have farms outside, especially coming from the Maruga community. But at least inside, you're in AC. You get to stand up. You're not sweating. But then at the same time, too, technically, production-wise, you probably get a bit better yield and a quicker yield in terms of growing it hydroponically indoors. Not to mention the pest. So one of our main selling points, I think, is we don't use any sort of pesticides or herbicides or anything on the plants. So they're totally enclosed, so we never have to use anything from the time we seed them to the time we harvest them. So nothing ever touches the leaves.
Have you ever checked to see if the shelf life of a hydroponically grown leafy mm-hmm. green is the same as one done in soil?
Not a test that we've done personally, no. So I'd say no. And a lot of times it depends how it's grown hydroponically too. So sometimes you could give something, I guess, the right nutrients, but it might be under stress, whether it be heat, maybe it's not getting enough oxygen, because you kind of need to meet all these certain parameters doing it hydroponically that the plant would naturally get in the soil. So if you do something a bit off, it might spoil quicker. But to say we've tested it side by side, because I'd like to think you tested with the exact same crop in the soil versus saying just a head of lettuce, my head of lettuce versus yours might be different lettuce. So that's where it's not something we've done to say. Well,
yeah, and in-soil farming is the same thing too. Eh? I mean, we on our farm, I think we were calcium deficient in some of the items. So you pick it today, by next 2 days, these things are wilting.
Yeah, yeah.
So the same thing applies. Well, I definitely do see the benefits of having a hydroponic farm, just because we have to go with a weed whacker and clear these fields every time rain falls, or rainy season is every single week. You're trying to weed the beds, you're fighting with the pests, you're getting bitten. You're fighting with the people who don't own the crops, but they feel like they own the crops.
Right.
So that's quite interesting. What's the next step for your company?
I think we've been able to grow because we've been innovative, and we've also always tried to look to see how best we could provide for our customers in terms of their healthy lifestyle. So ideally, we would like to know what are the products that we could develop that our customers want and see if we could find more efficient ways to grow them.
Within the leafy green space, or are you thinking of other crops as well?
I'd say other crops as well too. So apart from the leafy greens, I mean, anything that we think we can grow well, and maybe it's something that we tend to import, that's something specifically that we'll be looking at.
Yeah. Now, the market for leafy greens, do you find it's getting saturated now?
I think there are a lot of people in this space, so it does become a bit more competitive, which maybe might be good for the consumer. And for us as well, too, it kind of keeps us on our toes to make sure we're trying to produce a top-of-the-line product consistently. But that's also where the diversification helps, trying to go into other things.
Yeah. Now, when you approach supermarkets with these items, you have a full print bag.
Mm-hmm.
You're not giving them lettuce in a clear plastic bag and not in it.
No.
So the first time you presented stores with something that was internationally retail ready, I'll call it that, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What was the response that you got from buyers?
Your greatness here? Pretty much. But yeah, it was a case of like, is this imported? But I think when we first went, yeah, we never went with the just straight plastic bag. I mean, our packaging has evolved from when we first started. But it was always something that was printed, something that, I mean, it's something unfortunately that we're importing, but presentation does matter, and the quality of the bag for the customers to actually be able to reuse, I think, is important for us. Well, reuse in the sense of it's sealable.
Ziploc,
not Ziploc, but adhesive.
Okay.
Yeah, so you can take it off, you can fold it back, seal it's sealed. You don't have to, I guess, fight up with a bag maybe that you open once and it's like exposed.
You do microgreens as well?
Yes.
I had a guest on the show previously that did microgreens, and he said it was something that is still not as common locally. What's your experience been like with it?
I mean, yeah, similar. I think a lot of restaurants use microgreens, and customers as well too, maybe tend to have seen it in restaurants as garnish maybe. So maybe they don't use it as much as I would say I think it's possible to use, especially like with our experiments, we've been able to put it as just a straight microgreen salad, which I tell people and they're like, that sounds ridiculous. But when you actually eat it, I think it tastes good. It has a nice crunch to it. It has good flavor. So I feel like the nutritional benefit of the microgreens as well too is a lot better than full leaf, full mature greens. So that benefit, I think, is a win-win for customers if they knew about how to use it.
So let me ask you, when you fill out a form and they ask you your job position, what do you...
Farmer. I mean, I put farmer. And when I tell people I'm a farmer, obviously, they kind of sometimes look at me like, okay. But which is fine. But I guess a little more explanation and understanding that like farming is more than what you think of the traditional sense, backbreaking work outside.
Still a stigma though to it.
Still a stigma, definitely. Yeah.
How do you feel about the support that you get from institutions, state institutions?
We've gotten support from the ministry specifically. So we would have gotten access to a couple of grants. So one from the agriculture and one from trade. And as with everything in government, honestly, it sometimes takes a little bit longer than you'd want it to. But the help is there, and we're happy to be able to utilize the institutional facilities.
All right, so we get into the end of my allotted hour. Mm-hmm. Just one more time, if you could go over the company, the brand, and some of the items that people could look out for.
Okay, so, I mean, our mission at iFarm is to try and have a positive impact on people's health. So everything that we're doing, whether it be from what we grow, all indoors, all pesticide, herbicide free, all our leafy greens, vegetables, herbs, and mushrooms are grown with the highest care and quality. It's something that you can find in supermarkets nationwide. You can also find us on social media, whether it be Instagram, Facebook. You can place orders direct from us, so that way you're able to get it a bit fresher. And we're also trying to innovate, and maybe even something that we didn't go over, try to educate as well to certain people within the space.
Wonderful. So iFarm, do you have any social media handles that people could get more information from?
Yeah, so Instagram and TikTok, iFarm TT Limited. Facebook, same iFarm TT Limited. And yeah.
TikTok, what do you do on TikTok?
I don't really manage the TikTok, but I believe it's just certain videos that you'd see inside the facility. Try to engage customers.
David, thank you for joining us. I appreciate you coming by. Of course, to our listeners, be sure to look for iFarm TT. Doing something good, local, healthy. And next week, of course, I will be in on of agribusiness innovation. Throughout the course of the week, we will be releasing who our guest is going to be. So, of course, stay tuned for everything agriculture, innovation, and business related.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.